Good, brother. Man, y'all turn in your Bibles, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 1. Thank you, worship team. I appreciate you guys so much. Good having Tyler back with us this morning. Getting adjusted to new fatherhood. Missed him when he's not. I always miss people when they're not here, but good to have him back. Thank you. My back, lower back's just kind of jacked up this morning. It's going to loosen up. I usually it loosens up during worship, but it's about to loosen up in the Word. Thank you, brother. This morning I've had all week I felt like the Lord wanted me to bring this Word today. We're going to get to a place. We're going to talk about Hannah and Samuel. We're going to build and get to a place that's off a statement that Mario Murillo made years ago, and he said Hannah wanted a son, but God wanted a prophet. And I'm convinced that God always dreams bigger than we dream. You think your dreams are out there, I promise you, go a little bit further, and God, that's where you'll find God's. He's going to, and I found that true in the natural with children and grandchildren. Typically, I think bigger concerning them than they do, because I'm looking at it from a different perspective. And we come in and we think this is as large as I can be. We settle and say this is good enough. And God always wants to stretch that and grow that and be bigger than what we settle for. So I want us to, we're going to read several verses this morning, then we're going to jump in. I got some bullet points that are, the Lord is speaking stuff to me on. So we just want to kind of hit those and, man, treat it kind of like a buffet, and there'll be some points in this that will be very applicable to your life. And, you know, always take prophetic words. Like I tell people, it's like eating fish, man. You just get the good stuff, and if there's bones in it, spit the bones out. So we'll hopefully the Lord will speak to all of us this morning. We're going to start in verse 1, 1 Samuel. We're going to be reading out of the King James this morning. And it says, now there was a certain man of, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Joram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zoph, an Ephrathite. One thing that we don't see in the book of Samuel that I find interesting about Elkanah was the fact that he was a Levite. So that tells me that he was a what we would call a kingdom man. The Levite was the tribe of Israel, the Levites that were set aside. They were designated to serve the Lord. First and foremost, that was their identity. And we want to have all this identity. We want to have all this image that that we think makes us look cool and all of that stuff to the world, or having it together and all of that. And first and foremost, I want my identity to be that I'm a kingdom man. And that's more than just some things that I do, but it's your core DNA. This is who you are, because everything will flow out of that. And so I see him being a Levite, and it tells me his mindset out the gate was that this was a guy that he grew up and he was raised in the fear of the Lord, of knowing the Lord, of understanding the Lord, of serving the Lord, of ministering to the Lord. And I want so much for our children and our grandchildren, all of these kids. They may be your children there, our grandchildren that are up there, and the youth and all of that. I want them to so get that that above all else, we're kingdom people. And we have purpose, and we have destiny, and we have calling, and we have responsibility. And these are the things that we do. This is how we do life. I was so proud. We had dinner with Marty and Krista the other night, and which I knew they were going to do it. But we gave the grandkids all a heifer a couple Christmases ago, and you know, so they can kind of get started and have them some cows and all of that stuff. So all the grandkids got one. They named them and all of that. And of course, when it came time the calves to wean them and sell them, they all got, you know, got $600. That was the average of what they were bringing. And I love Rhett and Errol told Caroline and KK. They said, all right, now said, when you get your cow money, there's two things we want you to do. Is we want you to tithe 10%, because that's what the Word teaches us. and we want you to take 10% and sow that back into the farm. And I like that because you've got to invest in the thing that's going to keep producing. And I could preach about six sermons on that right now, that if you don't invest in the thing that's supposed to keep producing, it will stop producing. And we were eating with Marty and Krista the other night, and Krista said, said, man, Caroline gave us $60 for Honduras, for Project World. And that's what she tithed her 10% of her calf into. And she said, I'm going to buy some tables for the weekly feeding that we do. And so Caroline will have some, the tables will be down there from the money that Caroline gave to that. And Chris said, I'm going to take some pictures and say, hey, this is what we did with the money and all. And the reason I say that, yeah, I like to brag on my grandkids, but the reason I say that is I want them to grow up understanding that this is what we do and we have a responsibility in life. That we are a separate and peculiar people and we're called out and we're set aside. And as God calls us out and he sets us aside, the word says we're a nation of kings and priests. And that means we act accordingly and we live accordingly and we honor accordingly and we love accordingly. And I believe that Elkanah falls into this simply from his lineage of the fact that he was a Levite. And that changes your perspective on life. It changes your perspective on how you treat people. It changes your perspective on how you treat your spouse and all of this. When you come from the perspective that he was coming from, when we come from that perspective, it's like, this is what we do. I remember when I was a kid and I was coming up, and many of you are probably in this, have been in this same boat before. My friends would get to do things that maybe I wouldn't get to do. I remember even as a 17, 18 year old boy, as long as I was living in my mama's house, my mom and daddy's house, I had an 11:30 curfew as an 18 year old kid, y'all can imagine as an 18, I'm like, that's bull mess right there. I'm a grown man. I can vote and do whatever I want to do and all of that stuff, go get drafted and all of these things. But that was the rules that my parents had established. And even when Nick lived with us, I will never forget, he got in hot trouble when he was hooking up with your mama and come in late one night. And which I'm glad things worked out fantastic. So that was definitely good. But Nick got in such hot water because he came in, he was late for curfew, and Mama Lurie was, woo, she was not happy. I think Bones and Mark were over there. They left when we kind of got word that Nick was on his way home. They scattered. They was Bones was like the fear of the Lord, or the fear of Mama Lori. But I used to do this with my mom and my dad, and I'd say, but so-and-so does this, and so-and-so gets to do that, and so-and-so, especially when I was younger. I mean, I got it when I was 17, 18. It just was what it was. But when I was younger, I would be like, and they say, yeah, but you're not so-and-so's kid. You're our son. And our son is going to do this, and our son is going to act like this, and we have an expected behavior of our son. And so that was a lens and a perspective that I grew up in. I believe Elkanah had this. We would do well as kingdom people to remember who our daddy is. Who our daddy is. And this is not a burden to bear. It is it's a honor and it's a blessing and it's a privilege to be called and chosen. When Peter's writing his epistle, he's not saying, "Man, I'm sorry, guys. You're a separate and peculiar people and tough luck. Well, you should have been born better and all that." He said, "Man, this is such a honor and a privilege and all for us." And I just give that background. That's a little bit of a free sermon, but I give that background because I believe this is the perspective that Elkanah was coming from. If the enemy can do anything in our life, it's to distort or change our perspective where we're viewing things the wrong way, where we're inappropriately seeing things. He'll give us these false summits and say, if you can reach this, you've reached the top. And if any of you have done any type of mountain climbing or hiking or anything like that, the false summits, you'll see it and you'll be like, man, if I can just get there, and you'll set your eye on this point and you'll get to this point. And then sometimes when you get to that point, and then that's just a false summit and the real summit's way on up here above it and all that. And you're like, man, I didn't see that before. And I had my eyes set on this, and it's all about perspective. It's all about perspective on what is our viewpoint and how do we see things. And I'm convinced that is the key to being successful in life, is our perspective on things. And so we're going to read a great story about Elkanah and Hannah and their son Samuel in this. And I believe the key in all about this is how they maintain the proper perspective. So we get this out of the way in verse 1. About some of his lineage. The Chronicles, I think, is actually list and tells us that he was a Levite. And in verse 2, it says, and he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Just one of my little sidebars, and I always like to bring this up, man, is this was a polygamous society, a polygamous culture. I don't think that was God's best for them. It certainly wasn't God's idea to bring Hagar into Abraham's mix. It was Sarah's idea. And, because she said, man, we've got to produce some stuff. And so we're going to come in with all of this addendum. And God's like, I want you to be, connected with this and married to this and solely focused on this. Give your heart to this. But in this culture, he had two wives. The problems with, divided affection. You know, we come in and it happens with all of us, you know, that we get distracted by the world and we get pulled by the world and we get enamored by the world and problems and all that. The Lord really told me this week I had to not look at media this week. So I hadn't looked at the news this week. And I'm not saying that we live out of touch with the world, but you can get so bombarded with it, guys, to where you just can fall into a place of despair. And so this week I had to back up and, you know, just back off of it and just don't look at it. I don't care what Nancy Pelosi did this week, and I don't care what Fauci said this week, and I don't care about, you know, what LeBron tweeted this week. It's you know, so I've had to back off because we do get a divided attention and we get divided affection. It just complicates things and it causes so many issues. And they come in right here, and he had two wives. One was producing children. One had no children. In verse 3, it said, and this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Shiloh was a man, for no other better phrase. It was a set aside place. It was a place of worship. It was a you know, if you would think, man, it's where the church was. Okay. Yeah, that just in our terminology, and they would go and annually and do their worship, their sacrifice. You know, it was always a trek to do this, but they would come in and they did it on a consistent basis. The children of Israel had three main feasts that they had to observe, and those three main feasts, they had more than that, but they had three that they actually traveled to, and they did the feasts that they traveled to. And at this time, they were going up on an annual basis to Shiloh. And it says, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. Verse 4, and when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary also perverted her sore, for to make her fret because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Then said Elkanah her husband to her, Hannah, why weepest thou, and why eatest thou not? And why is thy heart grieved? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. So they were going into this temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness. I'm going to read a lot of scripture and we're going to come back to it. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thy handmaid, but wilt give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give unto him, or unto the Lord, give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. She's basically saying, God, if you'll give me a son, I'm dedicating him to him, to you. I'll give him to you, and I'm making a Nazarite vow. A Nazarite vow was where they would set them aside and they would consecrate them. They wouldn't cut their hair. There were certain things that they wouldn't eat. They wouldn't do things. If you're an adult, you wouldn't drink wine or stuff like this. And it was totally consecrated and set it aside for the Lord. And she said, Lord, if you'll bless me with a son, because I am barren, I will give my first fruits to you. I will give him to you. Verse 12. And it came to pass as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. Great sermon out of this is Drunk on Hope. Where we come in and we're so moved and we're so desperate and we're so crying out to God that we're drunk on that. We're intoxicated on that, on the need and the hope and the possibility that God can only move in this and God will move in this. And so we look at this, and she was just really broken of spirit. And Eli said unto her, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. He's like, woman, you're coming into church and you're drunk. And Hannah answered and said, no, my Lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Baal, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, let thy handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. There's something powerful about leaving it in the altar, guys. So often, this is one of the most challenging things that any of us can do, is we'll come in with our petitions before the Lord. We'll come in with our needs before the Lord. We'll come in and we'll be like, God, I need you to move in this. And God, I need you to stir in this. And we'll come and we'll pray it to God, whether it's here or an altar at home or wherever we're doing things. But then we carry it with us. And we don't leave it with the Lord. We it becomes worry. It becomes a lack of faith. It becomes all of these things because we refuse to leave it with him. And at some point, we've got our faith and our hope has got to transition into a place of trust where we say, God, you got this. God, you got this. And I'm going to put this in your court. And I'm going to do everything I can. But at the end of the day, God, I'm leaving it with you. And that's what she did on this. And her countenance was immediately different. She ate and she strengthened herself. And in verse 19 it says, and they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord, and they returned and came to their house in Ramah. So they had finished their time of worship and sacrifice. She hit this threshold. And of all the years, and I'll just throw this out because this is not in my notes, but of all the years, I see her coming every year and she's bringing with the same petition. And it was something that just so wore on her, kind of a war of attrition. And she came to this place where she left it. And then she went home and her countenance was different. She was no more sad. And she said, I've done everything I'm doing, that I can do, and I'm going to leave it with the Lord now. I think we come to a point where we have to get in this place of trust where we just say, all right, God, I can't control this, but you can. And so I'm going to put my hope in you. I'm going to put my faith in you. And as that matures, then I'm going to put my trust in you. I'm turning it over to you, God, because it's out of my control anyway. And so as she did that, she walked in a different countenance. I want to say a lot of times I feel like the fact that we can't let go of something and we can't give something to God is the thing that keeps the breakthrough from happening. I don't think it's coincidental that the Word talks about how she came in and Cindy, she gave everything to the Lord and she said, that's it. I'm declaring a Nazarite vow, God. If you bless me with a son, I'm going to give him to you. I don't think she had been to this place yet. And she got to this place, and just perhaps, let's think holistic for a minute, just perhaps that as she released this unto the Lord, then it opened up her from stress and worry and all of these things, and it caused her body to be able to receive. God was waiting for that moment. And we hold on to stuff so strong, and we hold on, and it becomes bitterness, and it becomes a source of agitation. It becomes something that if you look at a tree, and I cut a lot of firewood, and as I cut trees, I'll see places that as I get into these trees and I'm cutting them and splitting the wood, you'll see places where sometimes I'll get into where a piece of barbed wire has the trees growing around the barbed wire. It's grown around this, maybe it was a place of infection or disease or something, and it's come around, but it's caused the tree to be unhealthy. Not that barbed wire would do that, but these knots and stuff sometimes will cause the trees to become unhealthy. And that's where these black ants and all of this stuff can get in and cause the tree to eventually die. And what I'm saying, if we will learn to trust and come in and just release it with the Lord, let God do his thing in that, then that produces a level of wholeness in us that will facilitate our body to do what it's supposed to do, our mind to do what it's supposed to do, our spirit man to do what it's supposed to do. It'll cause an awakening, and I believe this is what happened with Hannah. So in verse 19, it says, they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house to Ramah, and Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. And the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer unto the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up, for she said unto her husband, I will not go up until the child be weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever. So what she's saying, I'm not going to come up for the next couple years until this child is old enough to wean. And when he's weaning age, then I'll carry him and he'll live at the temple. He'll live with under the care of Eli. And that's what I'm going to do on this. And Elkanah, her husband, said unto her, do what seemeth thee good. Tarry until thou have weaned him. Only the Lord establish his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bullocks, one ephah of flour, and a bottle of wine, and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here, praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. Do y'all notice the wording in this last sentence in chapter 1? It says, and he worshipped the Lord there. Who's it saying he worshipped the Lord there? It was not talking about Elkanah. It was not talking about Hannah. You know who he's talking about? He's talking about Samuel. Because of the faith of his mother, because of the faith of his father, the natural thing for him to do was to follow in that footstep of faith. And so he began to, I've grown up in a house of worship. I've grown up in a home of faith. I've grown up in a home of trust. I've grown up in a home where we honor God and all of this. So the natural thing for him to do is what? He worshiped the Lord there. It wasn't a stretch. It wasn't this big thing. I know we make this transition. It has to go from the God of my parents to my God. We see that happening in our children all the time, and that's awesome. I'm excited about that. But it starts with mom and dad, and then Samuel naturally followed into this. So I just love that little tidbit right there. Then it goes on, and in chapter 2, Hannah has a prophetic prayer. I know this isn't exciting preaching, guys, but this is, if you hang with me, this is some good stuff. I'm about to bring out some really good stuff in this. I like it when I can jump up and down and we're on a pogo stick and everything's like wired up and, you know, it's like a, you know, pregame and all of that stuff. But one thing I found is I need this basic stuff, this basic soil in my life so I can put roots in it and grow. And she comes in chapter 2. And Hannah prays this prophetic prayer that was much like Mary when she prayed her prayer and exaltation to the Lord after, you know, she became pregnant with Jesus and everything. We see Elizabeth exalting the Lord in a similar way. And she does this. Then it talks about how she had Samuel grew in the tabernacle at the temple there and all of this. But I say all that, but in verse 21, it said, and the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters, and the child Samuel grew before the Lord. Now, I don't know if she had three more sons besides Samuel or if Samuel was one of the three, but we know that she at least had five children out of this. And what started with nothing, what started with barrenness through faith and obedience, it wound up in blessing and bounty, okay? It wound up in blessing and bounty. And so I want to tell you, stay the course. Because we don't see the fruit sometimes to start with. We don't see results quick enough as Americans in this, man, this instant society that we're in and all of this stuff. And we don't see results quick enough. So you know what we do is we tend to punt too soon. We tend to quit too soon. We tend to back off too soon. And we do so at the expense of the future generations. We do so at the expense of the nation that we're in. And so if any of you are discouraged as Christians concerning the state of our country, concerning the state of the world and all of that, I want to encourage you and tell you, just stay the course. Stay the course. You keep being light. You keep being salt. That's what he tells us to do. You keep being light. You keep being salt. You keep having personal revival in you. You keep having personal revival in your home. You stay committed to the things that God's entrusted with you and stay the course in those things. And you're going to see fruit down the road. And that's what we see in verse 21. You know, we're like, man, it ain't happening quick enough. And I got a 3-year plan and I got a 5-year plan and all of this stuff. Well, your 5-year plan may be God's 20-year plan. That's what catches us sometimes. Is we'll come in and we'll say, man, I see it going like this in my mind's eye. And then it doesn't go like this. And so what we'll do is we'll be like, I must have missed God. It must not have been right. Wasn't meant to be. You know, God let me down or whatever. All depends on how our perspective is. But I really just want to say, in the title of my message this morning is when God's dreams are bigger than ours. And I'll get back to the statement of Mary O'Marillo is Hannah wanted a son, but God wanted a prophet out of this. And a lot of times we'll come in, guys, and we'll be like, man, I want this. And God says, yeah, but I want bigger than this. And that takes time. That takes time. I don't want to be inappropriate in this, but I'm going to go ahead and say this. I've really been, Lord, I always was like, oh my gosh, here we go. I've really been weighing it all morning and all of this stuff, but it just keeps stirring him in all of this stuff. And hey, man, they just talked about it in here. That's one thing that she brought to the temple and all this. And I'm not advocating anything by any means, but I had the opportunity this week to taste some wine that came from 135-year-old vines. And there was this cat, this immigrant from Italy, and he went to California in the gold rush to find gold. And he struck out and didn't find any gold. And he, but what he did have was he had some rootstock from some of their vines in Italy. And so he planted these vines out there. And he started growing vines and making wine and all of this stuff 135 years ago. And the vines got so rooted and did so well in this Napa part of California that they're still alive and they're still producing. And the lady that was telling us the story about this guy and the family name and all of this and everything that was telling us about this guy said, now, if you look at these vines, they're not as pretty as new vines, and the grapes are not these beautiful, you know, lush bunches of grapes and all of this. She said, they're kind of gnarly looking and they're just, you know, they're not the pretty table grapes that you're going to see, but they produce this amazing wine and this amazing wine. And the thing I love about this is the longevity of something that has been growing and producing for 135 years. And how many generations later can enjoy that? How many generations later can be impacted by that? And that's what I want us to get and to understand, guys, is when we get planted by God and we grow deep and we allow his dreams to override our dreams and say, God, do you want a profit out of this? I'm just thinking short-sighted. I'm thinking son. And God says, man, I'm thinking something a lot bigger than this. And we yield to that and we say yes to that and watch God grow this thing. Then you get something that is before Israel was a nation, Israel was a family, and before Israel was a family, Israel was a man, and it started with Abraham. And I want us to be those people. Even before we can, maybe we can't see the, you know, can y'all imagine what Abraham was thinking when God came in and said, your seed's going to be like the stars in the sky and the sand of the sea, and he can't even get his wife pregnant? Can y'all imagine how frustrating that is? And it got to the point, we know the story, it got to the point where his wife came and said, man, and this was acceptable in that culture. His wife came and said, you take my handmaid and she'll bear a son for me. And we all know that didn't work out too good. We're still dealing with the fruit off of that. With the whole Ishmael and Isaac thing. But you can imagine how big a stretch it was for Abraham for God to come in, and you can't even have one kid, and God said, your seed's going to be like the sand of the sea. It's going to be like the star. Look at the stars. That's the way your family's going to be. And we hear these prophetic people, and we hear the spirit within us say, man, revival. And we sing these songs, and revival's going to come, and the culture's going to change, and we're going to impact the world and all of this stuff. And we're like, man, I just ain't seeing it right now. And God says, stay the course. He says, keep believing and let your roots go deep. And you tend those roots. You tend those vines, the vines of your life. And you control that, Nick White. You can pray and you can intercede on what's going on in Washington. You can pray and intercede on what's going on in wherever. The UN in New York, or what's going on in Afghanistan, or any of these far stretching places, you can pray and intercede. But at the end of the day, you know what you can do is you can come in and you can tend to Nick White's world. One of my favorite scriptures in the entire Bible is found in, well, it's three chapters, Isaiah 60, 61, and 62. And what God does, he comes in and he makes all of these declarations concerning our life and all of these promises concerning our life. You guys read it when you get a chance. It's awesome stuff. So, so powerful to me is Isaiah 60, 61, and 62. And he comes in and in Isaiah 62, he says, I will marry myself to your land. I'll marry myself to your land. Whatever that looks like. If it looks like a plot of ground over in Corinth, if it looks like a local assembly, if it looks like your business, if it looks like your marriage, if it looks like your home, he says, I will marry myself to your land. But the first thing the Lord spoke something real clear to me, he said, I cannot marry myself to your land until you marry yourself to your land. I can't marry myself to your land until you marry yourself to your land. And I think we've had this big reluctance to marry ourselves to our land because what if it doesn't work out? And God's like, man, you just got to go for it. And you got to have faith and you got to have trust and you got to be led by the Spirit. And you just got to say, man, let's just do this thing and let's go for this thing. There are really no other options. And so let's do this and let's give it our whole heart and let's give it everything that we've got. And I see a family doing this right here. And I see the end of this. I see them being blessed. I see them it opening up her womb. I see her having and producing sons and daughters. I see Samuel becoming the prophet to the nation of Israel. So let me just hit my bullet points right quick. Speaking to anybody this morning, y'all getting any of this? I just want to hammer that in. The first thing that I want to fall into is we look in some of these bullet points in this. Let's look at Hannah and her adversary, Peninnah. Peninnah was his other wife. Peninnah had children. Peninnah was producing easily. Peninnah was provoking Hannah, taunting Hannah, throwing it up in her face. Look, I got all these kids. You're barren. You don't have anything. The world system will taunt you. The world system will tell you, you've got to be like us. You've got to look this way. You've got to act this way. And if you're not, you're less than. Shame's a big thing right now with our cancel culture and all that. Man, we're going to shame everything. You know, we're going to shame you. Do what you want to on the vaccine. You know, do what you want to on these. You pray about it. You let the Lord lead you in these areas. But the tool of the enemy now is shame. That shame if your body doesn't look like, you know, what they tell you it's supposed to look like. If your lifestyle doesn't look like it and everything. And Peninnah was the adversary of Hannah. And the one thing that caused Hannah a great deal of heartache was she was falling into the trap of comparison. She was looking at her life and looking at Penina's life, and Penina was having all of these babies, and she's like, man, she's got kids. I don't. She's got a new house. I don't. Let's start bringing it in modern terms. She's got a cool lifestyle. Mine's not. They get all of these things, and I don't get those things. I don't live that lifestyle. I don't take those trips. I don't drive those vehicles. I don't have this, likes or followers or any of this stuff, you know. And man, I got to pump those numbers up. I just got to get more followers on my Instagram account. And we fall into the trap of comparison, and that is something that is so detrimental to us, because God built me unique. God built me with a purpose and a plan in my life, and I've got a process that He wants to bring me through. God was going to do something great in Hannah. It just didn't look like what was happening in Penina. Did y'all hear me on that? God had a great plan for Hannah. It was just going to take longer to get there. If those vines that produced the grapes that I got to taste the wine the other day had been 10 years old, it would not have impacted me one bit. I'd be like, well, okay, that's pretty good. But what impacted me was the journey that it took for those grapes to get there. The 135-year journey. How many of Penina's kids can y'all name? Nick, you're a Bible scholar. Any of them? Tell me what they did, what they accomplished. You can't even tell me anything about Hannah's other kids. But you do know about Samuel. Samuel was the one that took the most time to get here, was the hardest to get here, that had to come through the promise to get here, that was bigger than what she was thinking to get here. But that's the one that, remember, that's the one that left a mark on the culture. That's the one that changed the nation. And so if you allow God to carry you through the uniqueness of your journey, the uniqueness of your testimony, the uniqueness of your life. Jeff, I'm glad you're doing your thing and you're not trying to emulate what everybody else is doing and saying, man, I'm going to do what this person did and this and this and this. You be Jeff and you flow in that, and as God opens up things and grows things and matures things and all of that stuff, then it'll be His organic work. It won't be, I'm not saying that we don't follow good principles. Absolutely we follow good principles. But you can't be us and you can't be Him. You be you. And Hannah's tore up because Penina's spitting out babies. And she said, I am missing the boat. I've seen countless people through the years come in and their friends are getting married. And so you know what they'll do? They say, man, I'm getting left behind here. It ain't going to happen for me. She said, well, you know what they'll do? They'll jump the gun. And they won't marry who God's got for them. Or they'll have kids when God's like, I was really wanting to wait a while on this. Tyler, I'll give you and Ambry kudos for sticking to the plan y'all felt like God had for y'all on that. Because I tried to get y'all with a child for 3 years. I think I gave y'all about a month after being married, and it was like, all right, it's time to start having babies. You're like, nope. We got it. I think y'all's was a 5-year plan. Felt like an 8-year plan, but it's like a 5-year plan. But you know what? You stuck to it. And you didn't fall into the thing. And even John, man, I was kidding him, not long after while y'all were pregnant. And I said, all right, man, it's time for you and Allie to get cooking now. And he says, oh, I don't know about that. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. Because we fall into that trap of comparison, and it was troublesome for Hannah. And man, you just stick to what God's doing in you, and you let God grow this thing in you. You let God bring it on His time. And Hannah wanted it sooner in the natural, yes. Because there was this huge thing of, if I'm a good wife, I'm producing seed for my husband, and I'm literally producing sons. And God's like, I'm not bowing to your timetable. So embrace the patience of God, I guess, is something that I would want to say on this. The next thing that in tying in with this is that God had a plan in this. We go back to that saying, she wanted a son and God wanted a prophet, and God had a plan. And God had to wait for her to mature into the place of saying, I don't want just a son. When I do get a son, you know who it's going to be? It's going to be the Lord's. And it took her a while to get there, Brett. It took her a while to get there because she come in and she said, I just want a son because I want to please my husband. I want a son because I want to please my husband. I want a son because it's a natural motherly thing to do and all of this stuff. And God said, yeah, but I want something bigger than that. And she finally got to the point where she said, we just read it in the story over there. God, if you will bless me with this child, he's yours. And when we have that mindset toward our kids, that God, this is a gift from you, and I'm in turn, I'm giving it back to you. If we have that mindset with our spouse, God, this is a gift from you, and I'm turning it back to you. There are things that God has withheld from me, and there are still things that God is withholding from me out of his love that he has intention for me to have. I remember we had breakthrough in a certain area a couple years ago, and the Lord clearly spoke to me. I was questioning him. I'm not going to lie to you, not out of anger or anything. I had very, very much a heart of gratitude. And I'm like, God, you know, what's, and he said, I can trust you now. God was wanting me to catch up with his plan. God was wanting me to catch up to his place where he said, I can trust you now. So everybody in here, God's got this stuff for us and this purpose and this plan and these things that he's wanting to do in our lives. And Matt, he's waiting for us to get there. He's already there in his preparations. He's just waiting for us to get there. He's waiting for us to get there. And a lot of times that's just a process that we've got to go through to get us to the right perspective, to get us the right viewpoint, get us the right maturity level, get us to the place where he says, I can trust you now. You know, we want to do a lot with a little. And God says, man, we want to get a lot before we do a lot with a little. And God says, I'm just waiting for you to get into this place. And so God had a purpose and God had a plan. And he was going to stick to it. So we can delay it, or I think we can pull things ahead of schedule sometimes too. And whatever that place is that God's wanting to get you to, it could be a place of understanding, obedience, gratitude, trust in him, his trust in us. As we go through this process, the process is to get us to this place. And, you know, she had to go through that. The next thing that I want to talk about real quickly on this is during this process, she found something that she wouldn't have found if she had not gone through the process, and that's the unconditional love of her husband. Some of my greatest growing seasons and growing closer to Lori has been when we've gone through adversity. We've gone through junk together. We've gone through stuff where we said, you know, instead of this dividing us, we're going to lock arms and we're going to let God knit us together. And I want you to look at Hannah and Elkanah and the way that he treated her and honored her and loved her. They're coming in, and you got this one wife, and we don't know how many kids that she had. She just had, she said, plural, sons and daughters. So Peninnah's got all of these, but his heart was toward Hannah. The word said he loved Hannah. And they would come in and they would sacrifice. And as they were coming in and sacrifice, then he would give a portion to both wives. He would give a portion to all the children. And they're bringing that to the Lord and enjoying that and being blessed by all of these things. But it said that in the King James right here, it said that Hannah gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. He asked her down in verse 8, when he was asking her why she was, why is your heart grieved and why are you weeping? And he knew deep down. But he said, am not I better to thee than 10 sons? He says, man, I love you unconditionally whether you're producing seed or not. And she would not have experienced that unconditional love. She knew that man loved her not because of what she produced, but because of who she was. And a lot of times we only experience that in the process. And so God wants to carry you through the process so that you can experience the fact that he becomes Jireh when we're in a place of need. He becomes Rapha when we're in a place of sickness. You see what I'm saying by this? Is he reveals himself strong when we're going through tough times. Right now, y'all are going through a program. And I'm sure it seems like a long 10 months or longer if you're staying for SLT and all of this stuff. But God can reveal himself to you in ways now that he never could if you were not in this season in your life, if you're not in this position in your life. And that's, allow him to show himself strong in that. Allow him to minister to you in that. Linda, allow him to minister to you in this place, you know, this season of your life. Keith, you're transitioning into retirement right now, you know, and you have lost that sense of community and all of those things. You know what, God's like, let me be your community as you transition into this. You know, we talk about that God wants to be our friend and what a friend we have in Jesus and all that stuff, but he's wanting to commune with us. So right now you're afforded a beautiful luxury of being able to fellowship and commune with him. And you didn't have that luxury in the same capacity a few months ago. So allow God to come in these places and allow, as we're going through this tough stuff, as we're going through these hard things, that we're experiencing this. We're experiencing unconditional love. We're experiencing commitment. It's easy when everything's good for her to say, man, I'm committed to you, baby. But when we're going through tough stuff and she still says, we're in this together, then you know what you got. You know what you've got in that. And when God walks through these tough things with me, these tough times with me, I'm like, man, he ain't going to leave me. He's never going to leave me. He's never going to forsake me. All right, closing up with these last couple things. Looking toward the end of chapter 1, we see Hannah conceiving, Hannah giving birth to the child. And she was faithful to her vow and to her commitment to the Lord. I know we say a lot and we promise a lot and we say, I'm going to be a kingdom man. We say yes to the callings in our life. I say yes to my life's journey is littered with people that started the walk and quit. I've been serving the Lord for 30 something years now. And I've had so many people, acquaintances, friends, that started the journey and said yes to the beginning of the journey, but somewhere along the way they fell by the wayside. And a lot of you guys have too, if you've done it any length of time. I can look at notes and letters that have been written to us and, you know, oh man, we're just... I can take you in that office in there and there's a picture of us and people, a lot of you guys, y'all wrote things on the on our 30th anniversary of ministry and all that, and some of those people are not even running the race like it appears they should be running the race. I don't want to come in and judge people's hearts and all that, but, you know, I'm like, MIA. Somewhere along the way, our follow-through gets distracted or gets aborted. And something I'll say about Hannah that I believe it opened her womb and allowed her to have future subsequent children and all of this is she was faithful to the vow and the commitment that she made. And when she made that vow and said, God, if you give me a child, I'll give him back to you and he's yours. I'll lend him to you your whole life. I think it's funny. I like the wording in that actually where Hannah says, I'll lend him to you. And God says, really, I'm the one that lent him to you because he's been mine the whole time. But I love that. That's kind of like the circle dance, who's chasing who. But she followed through with it. And she said, this is what I started and this is what I said and I'm going to be faithful to that. And year after year, she would go and she would visit her son and she would take him clothing that she had made and she would sacrifice and she would worship the Lord and stay consistent in that. And the fruit of that was Samuel became this mighty man of God. He's the one that anointed David to be king of Israel. He was a prophet to the night. He transitioned them from being a theocracy to more of a monarchy. When they said, we want a king to be like the other nations. And he said, man, he didn't like it, but God came in and said, man, let's do this. And he was the one that transitioned that. such a guiding force in David's life and such a tried to be a guiding force in King Saul's life. And a great man grew out of this. A guy that two books of the Bible are named after him and impacts us today as we read about him. All of these other people are nameless. All of Penina's kids are nameless. But this guy became great and became influential and became this powerful figure because somebody followed through with what they said they were going to do with the Lord. And this kind of ties in a little bit about what I talked about earlier is let's get some resolve about us and say, okay, God, I'm going to pursue you and I'm saying yes to you. And I have got such a heart of gratitude for what you did in my life. And I have not forgotten what you did in my life. And when I said yes to you, that was for keeps. When I said yes to her, that was for keeps. When I said yes to them, that was for keeps. And so that's why we come in here, and that's why we get up here with a microphone every Sunday, and that's why we do what we do as a group of people. I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about Tyler and Linda and all of you guys. That's why we come in and we do this. Because we said, God, we are so grateful for what you have done in our lives, and we've got this desire to know you and to be in fellowship with you and be in communion with you, and so that's why we do what we do. And I just want us to have this resolve about this, that you know what, I'm not quitting. I'm not quitting on him. I'm not quitting on calling. I'm not quitting on producing. I've been in the hayfield all week. I was just baling hay. Lord, baled 67 round bales one day. And while I was doing it, and it was hot and nasty, and, you know, you always have equipment issues that you have to deal with and all of that. And I was sitting here saying, why am I doing this? Why am I, David, I was really asking myself, why am I a farmer? Why, really? Because they don't make no money doing it. But then when the labor was done and when the job was done and I see the beautiful land and I see a barn full of hay and, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking that, you know, we'll have 15,000 to 20,000 pounds of beef that we'll sell this year that we'll all eat at, you know, the meat counter at Publix or Kroger or, you know, at Longhorn or something or Wendy's. And it's because guys said, I'm going to produce because God built me to produce. And it's hard, and sometimes it doesn't look like it's profitable, but it's good golly. And we just have to remind ourselves, this is why I do it. And you have, I'm sure a lot of times you have to remind yourself, why am I a teacher? You know, your salary is okay. But it ain't like you're going to live lifestyle of rich and famous off a teacher's salary. You know, me and Nick's had it. Nick made a lot more money selling paint than he does coaching wrestling at Carrollton and teaching. But there's this calling and there's this thing that God said, this is what I want you to do and this is how I want you to impact lives and this is how I want you to change the world. And we have to remind ourselves, this is why I do this. And so I'm going to keep doing this. And I'm not going to let anything take. I'm going to follow through on this just like Hannah followed through on this. And I'm going to watch God grow this thing and I'm going to let God do something wonderful with this thing. I bet the little Italian immigrant had no idea that 135 years later somebody's going to be drinking wine off a vine that he planted. But somebody is somewhere. Or you get in the old world and you're talking about even older than that. With olive trees and all of this stuff, any type of thing like that. And so the things that we plant today and the things that we set in motion today, we have to do so with the vision that God's going to grow this thing and God's going to do something great with this thing. I'll close with this. And y'all have heard me say this before, but I think it's fitting. When Rhett and Errol got married, they got married up at Boone Hall in Charleston. And going down the drive at Boone Hall, there's an avenue of oaks, and it's live oaks, and I forgot how long the driveway is. It's, you know, probably a half mile or something like that. But it's a pretty, wouldn't you say about a half mile, Rhett, something like that? About a half mile, pretty significant. on each side of the drive, and it's your classic little dirt sandy road that goes up to this plantation place where they used to grow rice and all of these things and cotton and all. But somebody came in, and somebody, one of the owners, back in the 1700s, he came in and he said, I'm going to plant these live oak trees, and I'm going to space them out along this drive, knowing that he would never see them come to a place of grandeur and beauty. And we drive down it and we marvel now, and visitors come in and they marvel and they say, that is amazing and that is beautiful. And it's because somebody had vision and somebody had foresight. And somebody said, I'll do something for future generations that I'll never see the fruit of, but I'll still do it for future generations. And that's what God was doing with Hannah. God said, I'm going to raise up a prophet that's going to change the world, but I've got to get you into a place for you to mother him first. I've got to get you into a place of trust. I've got to get you into a place of submission. And then when you get to that place, then that seed's going to come forth and we're going to make something great with it. And I just wanted to tell you guys, as we come in and we embrace this process, and every one of us in here, this is applicable for, when we embrace the beauty of the process, just keep in mind, God's dreaming of a prophet when you're dreaming of a son. God's dreaming bigger than what you're dreaming. God's dreaming generational when you're dreaming right now. Well, I ain't feeling it. I was not feeling it Thursday. Friday, I guess it was Friday. I wasn't feeling it Friday. I was not feeling it. But then I look on the beautiful fields and the fat cattle, and I'm like, that's why I do it. I put a piece of meat on my plate, and I say, that's why I do it. Let us be those people. Don't worry about what the world says and what the world's going to do, but you do what you know you're supposed to do. Let that sink in for a second. You can't worry about the fact that they're not doing this. I get aggravated at the percentage of people that don't pay income tax. I'm like, you're kidding me. You're wanting all the privileges of living in our country, but you don't want to pay any of the taxes. And so, you know what? We shoulder a lot of that burden. I get aggravated with that. And God says, you just do what you're supposed to do. You do what you're supposed to do. You do, Linda Carter, Christian woman, kingdom woman. You be busy about doing what you're supposed to do. You just focus on being a Proverbs 31 woman. Keith, you just focus on being an Elkanah. So I'm going to love and honor my wife, and I'm going to love and honor God, and I'm going to keep being good, and I'm going to keep being kind, and I'm going to keep being productive. And when we do that, God's got a plan. God's plan. That's what I want to tell you young folks. That's what I want to tell you guys. You just keep doing what you're supposed to do. Because I'm on a tractor and I'm thinking, is anybody going to do this behind me? Will my kids take up the mantle? Will my grandkids take the mantle? Or is this going to be a pine forest in 20, 30, 40 years? I'm going to be around for 30 years. I'll still be on the tractor in 30 years, but 50 years. Is somebody else going to take up the mantle? And God says, don't worry about that. You just keep doing what you're supposed to do. And I said, okay, Lord. You keep doing what you're supposed to do. Just keep doing what you're, you know what your son needs you to keep doing what you're supposed to do. Jacob, let's just keep doing what we're supposed to do. That's it, guys. It's simple. That's the gospel. Tiff, that's the gospel. Let's just keep doing what we're supposed to do, what we know to do, what we're called to do, what we're loved into doing. He gives us liberty to do that. He gives us strength. He gives us courage to do that. Let's do that. Let's do that, Errol. Let's do that. Have the courage to do that. All right? Let's stand to our feet. I'm sorry today was meatloaf and not filet. I like to, filet's a lot more fun to cook than meatloaf. But I need all of it. I need all of it. I didn't even think about it, but I guess it's kind of coincidental that it is Labor Day weekend, right? It's Labor Day weekend. Labor Day. Just keep doing what we're supposed to do and what we're known to do. And God will honor that, and God will increase that, and God will cause that to be generational. God will cause that to be generational. You ain't going to have to coax him into it. He'll see the goodness of it. He'll see the goodness in his dad. He'll see the goodness of it in his mama. He'll see the goodness of it in the community that you guys raise him in, the kingdom community that y'all raise him in. And it'd be a natural thing for him to say, you know what? It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. I'm going to pray a prayer of blessing over y'all. We're going to dismiss this way. I'm not going to do the worship team and altar call and all that. I just want to pray a prayer of blessing over you guys. So y'all just be in a place to receive. Just posture yourself to receive from the Lord. Father, I just lift up everybody that's here today. I pray for the ones that are in our community and our body that are traveling and not here this weekend. I pray the same prayer over them. I pray that we would be a people that are so established and so rooted in you that we are unmovable, we're unshakable, that we do what we do and we work and we produce because of we walk in the responsibility because you have placed a calling on our life, you've placed an identity on our life, and I pray that every one of us would just walk that out with intentionality, with passion, with purpose, and receiving your grace to do it, Father. When we get tired, when we get weary, when we get our focus gets distracted, that Lord, you just bring us right back in. You would bring us right back in. I pray that your goodness and your mercy and your love would be the blinders that keeps our focus in front of us and where it needs to be. We're so moved by you. And that we would say yes, not just to a faith in you, but we would say yes to a partnering with you. As we go out and we let you dream in us and through us. And I just pray for everyone in this place, Father, where they are in their journey, meet them there. Where they are in their journey, meet them there, Father. And Lord, just establish them. My prayer blessing over these people this morning is that you would be established in Him. You would be established in Him. I just declare that word over them. Established in you. Individuals would be established. Marriages would be established. Homes would be established. As it keeps expanding, it would be established in you. And we thank you for the soul that you are, God, because you are a good soul. You are a trustworthy soul. You are a faithful soul. You are a loving soul. And I just thank you for that. And let us just be rooted even deeper and deeper in you. It's in Jesus' name I ask these things. And Lord, as we go out, I pray we would go out in you as you. We would go out in you and as you this week as we hit the world. I ask all these things in your sweet name. Amen.